Welcome to the Vegan Report. My name is Ryan. This episode is a reminder of why we want others to become vegan. Not just because we care about animals, but also because being vegan is amazing. And we want to share this beautiful life experience with the rest of the world. And to discuss this topic, I have with me Dr. Angela Crawford, a psychologist who wrote an entire book dedicated to this issue called The Vegan Transformation, which explores the impact of a vegan lifestyle on our emotional, mental, and spiritual well-being. Among other things, we discussed if there was a right or wrong way of being vegan, Jordan Peterson and the question of meaning, why vegans can be harsher with fellow vegans than carnists, how veganism is a religion, the resilience of vegans, and much, much more. Get the book now. Link in the episode's notes. And for more thought-provoking conversations, support this podcast by sharing it with your fellow vegan. I was thinking of the last episode I released with Bhante Sethi. And the whole intro of that episode, the whole premise was that being vegan is hard. And lots of people struggle to stay vegan. That's why we get some studies from Phenolytics talking about how there's a big relapse rate in the vegan community. And when I, received your book, I was a bit skeptical at first. But then I remembered, well, you are a 10 years vegan. There must be some benefits in being vegan that, made you stay vegan for all these years. Yeah, what do you make of that, of those two, opposite, that tension between is veganism, a struggle, or is veganism, something beneficial that adds enrichment to your life?
Yeah, I'm sure there's probably a lot of complexity to how I can respond to that, because I first want to acknowledge that different vegans are going to have different experiences. Just, even though we're a smaller group than those who are not vegan, it's still a wide, expansive group of people that are vegan for a variety a variety of things have led us on this path. So first, just acknowledge that we can be vegan and have very different experiences. But what led me to look into the idea, I'd certainly heard and seen how veganism can be challenging. One, we're a minority. And so whenever you're living a different lifestyle than those around you, that can lead to challenges. And that's part of what you're referring to with some of the research, that some of the research finds that the biggest reason people don't stay vegan is for social reasons, that whole being different or being the one that stands out or having to handle social situations, which invariably involve animal products, that just some people find that very challenging to navigate and go back to what's familiar and comfortable and societally, the majority of people are doing. There's also other aspects that are challenging, the emotional aspects, especially for those that are very strong ethical vegans and or activists, feel when they understand what happens to animals and in so many different industries, and then they don't see people around them seeming to care. So those are definite challenges. And I, address those in the book too, but I felt there hadn't been enough attention to the benefits, and I certainly experienced them. And maybe being a newer vegan, it might be different for me than someone who's been vegan for a really long time. But I met different people when I shifted from vegetarian to vegan. I had a lot of inner shifts inside of me that something opened up. Even though vegetarian was a big step for me because I did it for ethical reasons, when I became vegan, I had to stand up in social situations in a way that I hadn't fully had to experience as a vegetarian was more acceptable, I guess. And so suddenly now I'm having to verbalize, why am I making this shift to vegan, that people had a harder time understanding. And I felt truer to myself. I came out of being very, very introverted and private to having a website and writing a blog and wanting to share this, wanting something shifted where I realized it was more than a personal lifestyle choice for me, but something that affected everything I cared about. That certainly the animals, especially as I really connected more fully with how so many industries are harmful and exploitive and cause suffering to animals. But I also realized it was connected to the planet. As a psychologist, I'd helped a lot of people with health issues over the years. I saw how it was connected to our health crisis. I just saw all these things really actually were very interconnected. And it felt like I couldn't just keep it to myself, that it was part of my mission to share it in some way. And so I wanted to bring my background in psychology. And so my interest was more, how does this affect us psychologically in a positive way? And I knew it had been positive for me, being more true to myself, finding an even deeper sense of purpose, feeling a weight lifted that I was aligned with my values more fully, that I hadn't even known there was a weight. So as I met different vegans around the globe, because I was in different vegan networking groups, and you feel this bond with people that you've never met before over this shared experience. And as I met people and they had the same feelings, and some of them had transformed their lives in different ways, I was just really surprised on LinkedIn, for example, how many vegans have businesses, have created, some sort of business to spread the message and share vegan products or share vegan services. So that just led to my interest in studying this more. So I think that both can exist, and what makes the difference can be a lot of things. I think how much support someone has as a vegan. Do they have both good vegan supports in their life, as well as a way to navigate relationships with the non-vegans in their life or the pre-vegans in their life? And it is, I don't know. I know there's been up and down as far as how societally accepted veganism is. It seemed like it was moving to a lot more acceptance. And then I hear lately that there's more negativity about it. So there's ups and downs there, but it is still probably much more accepted than it was, for vegans that became vegan 30 or more years ago. So I think there's a lot of factors that play into how we experience it. So I think it's complex, but I think both can exist, that it can be a life-changing positive experience that I want to invite people into. And yet there can be challenges, and I would not minimize that they're there.
So you reference your own journey to veganism, and that is a question that comes back again and again. What makes someone adopt a vegan lifestyle? I was at the AVA summit last weekend. That's why I was late in releasing episodes on my podcast. I had to prioritize that. And at that event, there was an interesting meetup about neurodiversity. And there, one of the person present in the meetup said, "You know what? I will say it, 70% of people in this movement are neurodiverse." And that made me think, well, then, do we become vegan because we are destined to be, because there are some quality to us that made us attracted to this? Or is it more of a, you learn about, ethics and all of that, and you shape yourself into a vegan through your life journey? What do you make of that question?
Yeah, it's so interesting. I don't think there's any hard science to answer it. So it'd just be reflections or thoughts that I might have. I do feel that the forerunners of any kind of social justice movement may have things that make them different, being willing to step out of what is considered normal or considered okay by society. And with this movement, I do remember there were being some studies with people who were vegans and omnivores looking at their brains when they witnessed animal suffering and seeing that vegans showed more empathy, and certain parts of the brain that measured empathy registered more than than omnivores did in certain seeing certain images. So did that come before or after? I don't think that's those studies can answer that. But my sense would be that a lot of people that do become vegan before it's quote unquote the norm, which is where we're still at, unfortunately, there must be something that makes them more ready to take in that knowledge. Because we all have had the experience of sharing about this with someone and them not receiving it the way we did. You know, we learned about animal suffering, and at some point something clicked in where we wanted to make a change. So I do feel that there's probably something different, whether it's, you know, the neurodivergence, whether it's a greater sensitivity, you know, emotional sensitivity or empathy, or, you know, I don't really know the answer to that, but I do sense there's probably something that's a little different. And the hope is that as it spreads and it becomes a little bit more and more mainstream, it'll be easier for people that may not have those same sensitive qualities, or however you might describe them, to also embrace this lifestyle more easily. But I think right now, yeah, it's there. I'm sensing there must be a difference because not everybody just rushes into it in the same way. And I think some people also are more affected by that social piece that we've talked about. You know, some, like you mentioned, someone who's neurodivergent or have other qualities, they might be more okay with being different because they're already different in some way. Or they might, some of us take pride in being different, you know, so we don't mind taking on a lifestyle that no one else around us in our immediate circle is in. But some people are much more uncomfortable standing out or being different. So I think that becomes a challenge for some people embracing a lifestyle that requires them to be, to go against what seem to be the norms in culture.
There was another workshop at the AVA about writing books, and I did not realize that the process of writing a book could be as long as, you know, take 3 years. How long did it take for your book to, you know, from writing the first page to publish it?
Yeah, well, it started first with research. I began that in spring of 2021. And the research was doing a survey and follow-up interviews with people who are vegan who were willing to do the survey. So, you know, I didn't have a huge circle at that time. I've gotten to know more people over time because I was still a fairly new vegan at that point, just a couple of years in. But I had about 350 people fill out the survey, and then I followed up with 75 interviews. And from that, and that whole period, that took about a year or more to do those. And then I followed up by looking at what were the core themes that came through, and those became the themes that are illustrated in the different chapters of the books. The book, the writing process, probably a couple of years, and I would say 6 months of that full time. You know, the last 6 months before it was due to the publisher, it was just like constant. Before that, it was sort of hit or miss. Like I'd do a little bit and then I'd be too busy and wouldn't get to it. And then, you know, I'd do a little bit more. So it was a long process. And what made me do it is just, it felt like something that I was called to do. I felt like I knew a lot of people who were spiritual and compassionate through my work as a therapist, through my spiritual path, through being a transformational coach as well. So all these people that cared about creating a better world, but yet they hadn't made this connection. And I just wondered, like, what would invite someone who's on that kind of path of growth or spirituality or becoming their best self? What would invite them into this lifestyle? And I just felt there was so much in common that for me, being more true to myself has been lined up with this path of becoming vegan. So I wanted to explore things that fit in that whole personal growth path and how does that relate to veganism? And there was a lot of overlap.
So, in total, that would be 4 years.
Yeah, because there was a year for the publisher to have it too. Yes.
Wow. Wow, that's
Yeah.
incredible.
Yes. The publishers had it this past year. And so there was a lot of back and forth with editing and other aspects during that time too. So,
That's so precious.
Just again about writing, and we'll get back to the topic at hand. How did it feel once, you know, you saw the book with the cover and, you know, yes, exactly. Once you had it in your hands, how did it feel?
Yeah, it was amazing because I've had a vision of writing since childhood, but for many years, just my work, I was just too busy writing other than maybe journaling was on the back burner. And to actually follow through and bring it forward is amazing because there were many times during the process I wasn't sure I'd ever get it finished. It just seemed like everything would get in the way but it just kept taking the next step and the next step and reaching out for support. I had different, you know, I had a book writing program that I was part of in the very beginning that kind of helped me with how to think through the outline and how to get the process going so that I had some traction. So different supports along the way, different coaches and mentors and people that encouraged me, but just taking the next step and the next step. And then when it came down to a deadline, when I had a publisher, Lantern Publishing, which is a great publisher. They work a lot with vegan and animal rights books. Just getting it done. And so, yeah, it feels amazing. It's just like, wow, this real thing in the world. And again, being more of an introvert, a book is a great way to express yourself because it just helps you put things, it helped me put things in words that maybe are harder for me to speak sometimes.
Yes, I can relate to that. Feels easier to write down things and then, you know, express them. Okay, let's get back to the book. So you mentioned what I would consider some buzzwords in the, you know, in that space of self-development. Now, I have to say, you know, this is not a world that I'm familiar with. The question I always have when I hear that is, you know, healing from what exactly, and growing to become what? What's the finality to all of that? So can we just first clear that up?
And I'm sure a lot of people would have different answers. You just had an amazing guest on, you know, your last episode on this podcast that I could learn a lot from. So I think we, you know, there'll be different answers from different people. So I guess speaking from my own experience, both personally and as a psychologist, you know, psychology studies different areas. Sometimes I'm a clinical psychologist. And so in clinical psychology, we're trained more to help people with things in their life that were impeding their functioning or getting in the way of life working as well as they'd like it to, things like depression or anxiety or trauma that might be causing symptoms and affecting their lives. There's also a newer part of psychology called positive psychology that is really about what makes life worth living, what makes us feel fulfilled as human beings. So it goes beyond just where we might have problems or challenges to what makes us want to live and, you know, really appreciate life. So I find both things interesting. Many of us certainly have challenges that get in the way in our lives that we need to learn how to navigate. And then hopefully we can also work towards greater meaning or purpose or fulfillment in our life. That's certainly a hope for many of us. I guess for me, it's about, I mean, I'm also a spiritual person. So for me, it's also about this sense that I have a deeper purpose. I may not fully understand it, but I feel like I'm here for a reason. I may not know all the reasons, but I'm trying to discover what they are and that I'm made the way I am to contribute in a certain way. And I believe other people have their unique gifts to bring in their own unique way. So that's kind of my way of looking at it.
When I read about, you know, the link you make with spirituality, I kept thinking of a case here in Canada of a firefighter who was denied, you know, he was sent to the wilderness to combat forest fires. And the government is supposed to provide you with food when you're in those remote areas. And they denied him vegan food. He's a vegan firefighter. And he decided to sue the government. His case, I think, is pending. And the argument he made is that veganism is a religion for him, and that should be protected. Do you agree with that? Can veganism be a religion?
That's interesting. I've heard that idea before, and you know, it might not be something others would recognize as a religion, but it's a set of beliefs and values that guide someone's life. In my way of thinking, it would make sense. I had one person that I interviewed that I think I share her story in the chapter that has to do with spirituality. And she says, you know, basically, I think of veganism as my religion, you know, or compassion as my religion is maybe the way she put it. But for her, the two were intertwined. So I did have people say that to me. And one who was an atheist would say that if I were to view myself as having a religion, it would be compassion and or veganism. So I would say, why not? You know, maybe not everybody would agree.
But the first question I asked Bhante Sati, who you referenced from the last episode, was about, well, how do you motivate people to want to be happy in the first place? And I mentioned how, you know, some people, because of guilt, because of addiction, because of all sorts of things, are just not interested in the happy, fulfilling life you portray in the book. So those people, you know, what do you make of them? And how to push them into the right way?
Are you thinking of anything in particular? Like, can you give me an example?
For sure. I mean, I went through a list with him, but like anger. I've seen people being addicted to anger because I feel like it's an intense emotion. Yeah. And activists can, you know, be very angry and feel entitled to that anger, mm-hmm. although it is very detrimental to their health.
Yes.
So anger is one. Guilt, you know, I mentioned, I don't deserve to be happy. You know, the animals are so miserable and all of that, so why should I be happy? Again, it feels very irrational, but I guess that's the point. You know, that's why they're stuck in this state.
No, I appreciate you sharing that, because that is a real struggle. And two teachers who I admire greatly that speak to this quite a lot, and I do reference them in my book. One is Dr. Melanie Joy, who wrote not only the book Why We Love Dogs, Eat Pigs, and Wear Cows, but also another book, Beyond Beliefs, that's about communication, and also has a section on trauma, you know, that vegans can experience. Also, Claire Mann, who wrote the book Vistopia, The Anguish of Being Vegan in a Non-Vegan World. So both of them are, you know, very immersed in their respective vegan communities. Claire Mann's in Australia, and Melanie Joy right now is in Germany, but both of them also have global communities. So they just are really deeply immersed with vegans. And I think the message that I get from them, and just from also my training to try to help people, I guess, heal or live their best lives, whatever that means for different people. First of all, you know, as vegans, we want to be effective. We want to help the animals. I mean, that's the driving force. We want a compassionate world where animals are not put in these conditions or suffering or exploited or commodified. And yet, you know, and so we have a lot of different feelings. And I do think, you know, as Dr. Joy speaks to, that some of us as vegans, especially those who witness a lot of what happens directly or through watching lots of videos, it can be traumatic to our nervous system. We're watching atrocities. And I don't think our nervous systems were really made to handle seeing that over and over again without having some kind of coping strategies or some support in place for how to handle that, because it's overwhelming. And I think it can change our thinking. People who have versions of post-traumatic stress or vicarious trauma of watching someone else have something horrible happen, it can change our thinking, where we only see the world in more black and white: good people, bad people, heroes, victims, perpetrators. And that ultimately is not going to lead to it's going to be challenging to lead to change for the animals, because we're sometimes then trying to communicate and handle things in a way that aren't going to connect to those around us who we're trying to influence, or hopefully have them awaken to some of what we're trying to share. So yes, if we're angry, it's detrimental to us, because I mean, if we're stuck in that, anger is a normal emotion. It's okay to feel it. It's normal to feel it when there's atrocity, but we need ways to work through the feelings so that they're not just stuck permanently in us, and that we're not just relying on that as our fuel, because that can lead to burnout. Definite. Our nervous system is not meant to be stuck in fight or flight forever. It's meant to be a temporary state, and then we have ways to kind of come back to balance. So I guess I would just say, because we want to be effective, one motivating factor would be, if we don't, it's true, if we don't take care of ourselves, we won't be very good at helping what the cause that we're trying to help. That we're also animals, we have limits, our nervous systems have limits. So that would be, I guess, my reason for wanting to work on yourself and care for yourself and have better tools.
Here's a more provocative way to maybe describe this, and I will tie it to a question. Would you say that those people who are unhappy and going through the vegan burnouts are just not doing veganism the right way? And that if they did it the right way, they would actually feel happier instead of more miserable?
Yeah, I don't feel comfortable with that way of thinking about things. I tend to appreciate people wherever they're at in their own way of doing things. I mean, there are people that are there on the front lines doing things that I'm not doing. And honestly, I've worked with people with trauma my whole profession, and that itself takes a toll on you. When you witness people suffering and you feel with them, you feel for them, and you have to have tools to kind of navigate that so that you're not burned out trying to help someone else. You know what I mean? So I can, I haven't been the one on the front lines with the animals, so I can only just empathize, especially for those that are doing more direct activism work. And I don't pretend to have an answer for them doing it right, but I would say that if someone is suffering, they too deserve care and help on their journey, and there are people that can help with that. There are vegan therapists. For example, In Defense of Animals has a great list of people who are, resources, as well as a list of coaches and therapists that, are vegans themselves. So I just say, those that are caring for others, in this case, caring for animals, which is, missing a lot in our society. There's just not there's not enough of it, clearly, of caring for animals. And so you're on the forefront of something that I believe, as John Oberg said on one of his Instagram quotes, is it will become the known to be the ethical and just way to live someday. And people will be like, I can't believe they used to eat animals, but we're not there yet. So I just have much compassion for people that might be doing this, and perhaps themselves suffering in the process because they're feeling with the animals and they're seeing things not change. But I would also say there is help and support out there too, and not to go through it alone if possible.
I thought that your book would be a powerful tool for activists that want to sell the vegan lifestyle. So, what would you say to activists out there, how to use your book, and what benefits should they highlight the most to a non-vegan audience?
Cool. Well, I appreciate you saying that. You know, when I did write it, I really did have two groups in mind. You know, one were the vegans I knew that who were like me and that they were always wanting to grow and learn and have more ways to share it and to share veganism and to also be fulfilled ourselves. Like, there is nothing wrong with wanting to be fulfilled yourself to have, you know, to that doesn't mean we're happy all the time by any means, but it does mean that we can feel good that we're trying to live as true to our values as possible. So I guess what I would say is, you know, and then the other audience were pre-vegans. I tried to write it in a non-judgmental way that would invite people that could be curious about this lifestyle, but not fully there to explore it. So I guess in terms of, you know, I guess it would be about relating to people where they're at. I think that is often what's helpful. And so I do touch on seven different transformative themes, I guess you'd say, that kind of came through. And so for, you know, they just to say them quickly, you know, one is values alignment, that, you know, you're really truly living more aligned with your values, such as compassion and justice. There's the deepening of compassion, expanding of compassion, because so often we have compassion for one group, but not others, you know, even though most people are compassionate towards animals when they do surveys and stuff like that, you know, that most people report empathy and compassion for animals, but we know it's compartmentalized, just as sometimes we compartmentalize it only towards certain people too. Then the next one, the third, was purpose and meaning. That a lot of people who are vegan find that just simply by not eating animals or buying animal products, and that itself leads to meaning and purpose. But then some take it further, whether it be through activism or through businesses or other ways of sharing veganism. And then authentic fulfillment. That one was a little bit more complex to try to capture, because I think that's in that chapter, I was trying to capture what you're referring to earlier, this whole thing of like we might struggle as vegans and yet there can be fulfillment, and you know, so kind of honoring that our emotions can be a complex place where we can have a lot of different feelings. And actually, those that are emotionally healthy are not people that are just happy all the time, usually. It's actually that they do have a diversity of emotions and they learn how to navigate those. Then there was connecting with a tribe. One of the most fulfilling things that, you know, we can experience as vegans is that there's other people that share this deep passion and commitment. And so that was fulfilling for a lot of people. And then empowerment over health, whether you became vegan for the animals, or some people I interviewed became vegan for health reasons, but then awakened to the compassion for animals once they weren't eating them. But whatever your reason, for example, one woman that became vegan because of the animals later healed her fibromyalgia. That just kind of happened unexpectedly because she no longer was eating all these inflammatory foods. So a number of people do have physical healings because plants are healthier for us. So that in our health crisis in this country and beyond, you know, that's a kind of an amazing thing that veganism doesn't necessarily always lead to. I guess it depends on if you're more whole plant foods or not, but it can lead to healing and empower you to realize I don't just have to depend on doctors or medicine necessarily, that there's things I can do. And then the final one was the one you and I talked about earlier, kind of a spiritual component or a sense that I'm connected with all of life. Again, once I'm not eating animals, I can see that there's this connectedness between me and all of nature. So I would say, you know, depending on the person you're talking to, any of those could be an entry point. If someone's sort of spiritual, you know, you could share how people have experienced spiritual deepening through not eating animals. And if they're into, you know, compassion, you know, that would be an entry point. If they have health issues, that could be another entry point. I think it's helpful to meet people where they're at, because if we just kind of go on and on about something that doesn't interest a person, I don't know, sort of connecting with them and then going from there.
I think we hear a lot about, you know, the health argument for veganism. I am of the opinion, you know, I don't usually invite people in the health space on my podcast, because I'm not a nutritionist, I'm not a dietitian. I don't know if what they're saying is, you know, accurate or not, but, you know, at a bare minimum, becoming vegan has made me focus more on nutrition, educate myself. You know, I used to eat whatever came around, and now since I became vegan, I learned how to cook. I learned about, you know, how to have balanced meals, mm-hmm. and all of that, and supplement, and also there's the fact that vegan food, even the junk vegan food, is not as horrible as the junk non-vegan food.
Yes.
So, you know, take even, you know, meat, for instance. There are traces of excrements in meat. There are hormones in meat. Mm-hmm. There are, you know, antibiotics in meat, and even antibiotic-resistant bacteria in meat. Like, you don't need to be a dietitian to know that this is bad for you, and you should be be consuming that. I should not know, you know, specific things about cholesterol levels and, you know, protein intake or whatever to understand that this is dangerous, and zoonotic diseases too. You know, this is more of a public health argument than, you know, individual consumption, but still a very important point. The rest, you know, that you brought up, I haven't seen many, if any, activists use those benefits to sell the vegan lifestyle. I mean, for instance, the tribe part. Let's make it, you know, veganism, let's make it a social group that you can join instead of, you know, let me show you all of that horrible footage of, I mean, that's a strategy, that's mm-hmm. a tactic that I haven't seen many activists, if not any, again, use it. You mentioned also the compassion, deepening the compassion one. This would be very interesting to explore with, you know, prisoners, or, you know, there are all sorts of programs that can be utilized to as vehicles for this message, where the whole goal is to really re-socialize certain people, and mm-hmm. You know, we're already using animals as a tool for that, with zootherapy with for instance, prisoners. So why not, you know, bring veganism in that space? So yeah, I was really excited to go through those benefits for that reason. And yeah, so what do you make of all of that? I'll let you speak.
I just had a thought. So yeah, like, I think whatever the reason that someone gets curious, it often then opens them to learning more beyond. So I don't think we have to feel that we have to invite people in just one way and have that be the only way. Or like, if someone becomes vegan for health, that they're not going to also be compassionate for animals. Some don't, but there's a lot of, you know, first of all, they're eating less animals, you know, even if they're not fully awakened to that piece yet. But I just found a large number, whatever their reason was for entering the door, that they started to learn all the other benefits and reasons for doing this over time. And it seemed that people that had more reasons for it were even more committed to it. So definitely, whatever way we want to introduce them in, and for some people, the positives are going to be the way they're going to be more interested. An interesting book that I'm just starting to read now, I haven't gotten very far into it, but it's a new book, Hungry, Beautiful Animals, by Professor Halteman. He's a professor of philosophy in Grand Rapids, Michigan, and he'd probably be great to be on this podcast. But his is about the joyful case for being vegan. After trying for many years to, like many of us, try to share the more negatives, you know, like what this is what happens to animals, this is the atrocities. He was finding that, I think, in his teaching and other things, that that wasn't landing as well as when he actually taught about the beauty of animals and taught about how complex and interesting they are, and started to like open people up to more positive aspects that then would lead to their interest and curiosity. And so I think that's sort of my way of thinking. I'm approaching it a little differently. He's a philosophy professor, I'm a psychologist, so mine is more about how do we grow and benefit personally when we honor our values and our compassion. And so for some people, that entry point is going to be more appealing than hearing the negative things that happen to animals. And it's not that that doesn't need to be known, but sometimes people shut down. You know, we humans don't like to suffer, and so people shut down when something is overwhelming to them, and they may not take it in, or they may get defensive. And so it's not always as effective as we'd like to share the atrocities that happen to animals. I know that I've done that before, and I can't say that I led to any change through that. But when I share the benefits in my life and why it matters to me, I do get more curiosity from people that want to know more. So I think we each have our own way. And so I'm not going to, I think there's a place for people approaching things in different ways. It's maybe most important that we find the way that is aligned for us, that we can share it and hopefully inspire others.
Well, I love the win-win-win model. So it's a win for me, it's a win for you, and it's a win for, the general public too, or a third party. Now, if you identify solitude as a struggle in society, and then you offer as a solution to join your local vegan community, vegan club, then it's really a win-win-win situation. It's a win for you. You're finding a community, you're breaking that solitude issue. It's a win for the cause, and it's a win for animals and society as a whole. So why not explore that? Why not? It's weird because people always compare veganism and the animal cause as a social justice movement. And I'm thinking about it more and more, not as a social justice movement, but as as we discussed later earlier, as a religion. And religions, which is a good thing for us, have had lots of success in gaining members and influence. And so maybe we should stop thinking about it as, social justice movement, and more as a religion that we're trying to spread. And just having this conversation, I started thinking, did we ever, was there ever a campaign to go and knock at people's door and do the kind of thing that Jehovah Witnesses do, like with a pamphlet, and just, I feel like that could be very impactful. Please look at all the benefits you would get from this joining this vegan cult. And so that's invigorating to see that, there is someone thinking about other things than protests and boycotting and all of that.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting the way you're putting it, and but inviting people in to learn more and sharing how it does benefit them. I mean, there is something to that. And as people learn more, then they can expand their reasons, for why this matters. But sometimes it's just entering in, and also, like you say, having a supportive community, which means I think one thing as vegans, we have to be more accepting of people's journeys. That, as you mentioned, there is a lot of recidivism, where people might start the journey and, but what they find is a lot of people that are not vegan anymore, that there's a certain percentage, like half or so, that want to try it again. So it's just sort of, I think we have to be a little bit more open to letting people in and not just making it a closed club, where you have to be perfect or you're out, or it's just, we have to support people because people do have challenges, and how do we support them through those challenges and make this an inviting community to be part of?
Yes, I mean, if you want to get into it, it's one of my biggest, interest, because I've seen groups, in under the vegan umbrella, who have been kind of excluded. For instance, people who are leaning right, like conservatives, people who are deeply religious, or find that, their veganism has sense through a religious lens, so, Christian people, all of that, who tend to be also pro-life, and that ties back to the conservative part. Now, recently, Jewish vegans, many of them, because of this whole political thing, have felt like they are no longer welcome in a movement that defines itself as, more on the left. And as a political movement, not so much as a, spiritual, religious, group. So yeah, how do we show that we have more in common than divides us, and that we should prioritize again and again the animals over our tribalism?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, you're naming something. Obviously, there's a lot going on culturally, and and certainly in the US, but also beyond right now, of just different divisions. And it's not surprising it would also show up in the vegan community, just because these things that are going on beyond us tend to show up in smaller communities too. But you're right. If we can look more to what unites us, what our shared values are, how, trying to understand one another better, and certainly wanting to be inclusive. I mean, yeah, some of us like being individualists, but I think we all want a vegan world. And so we're going to have to invite in people that are different than us for that to happen. We're going to have to learn to navigate different views on other areas. And so, yeah, how do we become welcoming and inclusive and navigate where we do have differences? And
Yeah, I was having this conversation recently. As a vegan, people I deeply love and care about in my life eat meat and don't care much about the animal cause. I haven't, censored them and, turned my back to them because of that. I haven't isolated myself from them because they don't share my vegan outlook on life. And in fact, I found value in being a constant presence in their life. And I've seen throughout the years that they have changed just from me being there and pointing out, hey, did you know that this is not good for you? Because and if I wasn't there, that change would not have been, incited. So then I'm always surprised to see vegans separating themselves from fellow vegans for things that I found to be very minor differences. How strange is that? And I feel like it's a psychological thing that is shared with many movements, that we're much more, harsh with people of our tribe than of others, those who are outside the tribe. So, yeah, how do you explain that?
Yeah. These are tough things to sometimes understand, but I think for many of us, we tend to want to protect ourselves in some way. It may not be conscious, but we think by closing off to people who have views that feel different or threatening, sometimes I don't know, we just seem to cut, many of us seem to cut off from dialogue around those issues. And then, and I'm trying to think in terms of myself when I feel that, what's going on? Am I feeling that someone might try to sway me to their point of view, when I don't want to be? Or am I feeling like they're not going to understand mine? Or is it, it seems like our culture has moved away from being able to dialogue about tough issues of disagreement. And some people I do think have that gift and that skill, but I do think it's more of a skill set that people have to actually work at. I think of, for example, nonviolent communication techniques by Marshall Rosenberg, where you're really trying to attend to what is the feeling that, is beneath what someone is saying. What you're going a little deeper with understanding where people are coming from. You don't have to agree with them, but you can say, I hear that you're feeling this. I can hear that you're thinking this, and validate that you hear them without agreeing for necessarily. And so I think this is a lost art or skill in our culture. You don't see it modeled in, the media at all, or very little. But it's something we're going to need to kind of come to, I think, because I don't know, things are kind of coming to a head with the way media and everything else is these days. So I hope we as vegans can learn that, because I mean, we're vegan in part because of compassion and a care for the well-being of others. So can we extend that compassion to others, even if we don't agree with them on certain issues, and just realize we're all trying to find our way, we're all trying to find meaning, we probably share a lot of the same values underneath.
Yes, definitely. I second that. Which one of those benefits that you named is, feels very meaningful to you personally?
Gosh, they all do in some way. Sorry, I need a sip of water here. Well, yeah, they all do, and it's really hard for me to narrow it down. But I think I've always been a person that's been driven by wanting a sense of purpose. So that is definitely one that's coming through. I would say the other would be compassion, that those two right now are the ones I'm thinking about the most. I've always been a compassionate person, but I realize that, like many of us, that's been compartmentalized, that I didn't look at, for example, the animals that were part of my food. I just, like many of us, I thought that, I was so socialized to believe I had to eat them, that I grew up in the Midwest, this is what you do. This is how we do things. You just don't look at it. You don't think about it. So for me, expanding my natural compassion, that's been a big one. And then through that, I think it's expanded my sense of purpose. So those two have been really meaningful for me. I've always felt purpose through my work, but now it's led me to a more public role than I guess I had before, because it felt like it mattered that much. And it's not that what I did before didn't matter too, but it was more private. It was working with people one-on-one. Now I see, like, bringing those years of experience to help create a more compassionate, connected world. That's just how I think of it, where we feel more connected to ourselves, to one another, to the sentient beings of our planet, to the planet itself, to the universe, and that we have more compassion for ourselves and for one another. And I don't see it as either or, I see it as all and.
Sorry to bring him up, but there's this guy called Jordan Peterson who is top 10 anti-vegan people, vocal anti-vegan out there. He always talks about meaning and, how it is important to gain meaning in one's life, and he you know, oppose that to the pursuit of happiness. He says that, you know, the pursuit of happiness is very superficial, and that we should mostly focus on meaning, and that happiness will come, you know, as a symptom of a quest for meaning. What do you make of that?
And does that relate to the anti-vegan part, or is that just a more general view of his?
Well, I feel like I had to mention that he's incredibly anti-vegan. He's one of those people who follow the carnivorous diet. And he swears by it. Every time he has a public appearance, he talks about how bad it is to have this plant-based diet and how you should be eating lots of meat. I mean, we'll see how his health, you know, holds up.
But I would think that that's going to be very hard on his cardiovascular system.
but he has lots of appeal.
I mean, I certainly don't agree with that part of his lifestyle, but that's, you know, regarding the meaning and purpose, you know, I do cite in my chapter on meaning and purpose that there was this article about differences between a happy life and a meaningful life. And they looked at how the two relate, and they found there's some overlap, that people who feel a sense of meaning do tend to be happier and vice versa. But there were also differences in this particular research where people that felt their life was meaningful, it could also sometimes lead to more stress or more arguments and some things that in worry, things like that. And they speculated that that was because when something really matters to you, you know, you're willing to fight for it, or, you know, so meaning could, I mean, a lot of people can have meaning. Obviously, people who we really disagree with can feel a sense of meaning in what they're doing. And so, I mean, I don't know that meaning is good or bad necessarily in and of itself. I think that's maybe why, for me, when I tied compassion and meaning together, because for me, you know, you could feel meaningful, I guess, just by taking advantage of other people. And I don't know, there could be meaning in ways that are not healthy by most of our standards, or not kind. But others of us, maybe meaning is part of caring for others, caring for the planet, caring for all sentient beings. And so that's where I fall on that spectrum, but not that I'm perfect in it. I guess we're all growing and learning where our blind spots are. And so, yeah, it's an interesting discussion that I would imagine that maybe Hitler felt meaning, you know, I don't know. But so I don't know that meaning in and of itself is always something we'd associate with good psychological health necessarily. It usually is, but that doesn't mean in every case.
Well, here's an unpopular opinion. I feel like Jordan Peterson is not a happy person, and I'm suspicious of that. I'm sorry, but if you can't, you know, be happy in your own life, how can you, you know, give me advice on my life and guide me to a fruitful, fulfilled life if you're this, you know, miserable person?
And I've never listened to him. Does he come across as sort of unhappy or?
Yes, he comes across as very, you know, frustrated and antagonistic and kind of like.
Yeah. Well, I'm with you. Like, I think when we're looking at people that we want to emulate, we want to see, like, what are the fruits of their behaviors and their attitudes? How does it make us feel when we listen to them? You know, I mean, those things are things we need to discern, because right now there's a lot of voices out there, right? I mean, and I don't know all the answers. I struggle with, you know, I struggle with holding the questions sometimes and not knowing the answers. At the same time, one thing that's really cool in my book that I love is that I quoted a lot of the people I interviewed with their great experiences and insights. And I just, you know, like what one person said is, you know, veganism to them felt like truth, because it felt like things came together, like what they already knew, that compassion for all beings, we all, Statistics show that, 85% or more of Americans believe animals should be treated compassionately, and yet we eat them. Some numbers are even higher than that, that people feel like we should be compassionate to animals, including farmed animals. But yet we eat them. So it's just sort of when something shifts, we're like, I don't just have to keep eating the way I was taught to eat. I can go back to what actually was probably more prevalent in the past when people had gardens and, grew their own food more and just eat from the earth more naturally. And yes, sometimes the processed foods too, but, no animal had to suffer for them. And they're also more sustainable for the planet. So there's just this piece when all these pieces come together that actually makes sense to us. Yeah, there's a lot of voices out there, and I guess we have to discern which voices really resonate in our hearts.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it is kind of our duty, at least in the communication space, to find ways to respond to those vocal anti-vegans and to give alternatives to people. So he's, again, he's very appealing, very popular. So yeah, we cannot just ignore him when he's so vocal against veganism.
And right now I understand that there's just a more of a vocal group like that these days, from what I understand. I don't hear a lot of it myself, but I hear from other people about it, and it seems like, yeah. And some people have speculated. It was a podcast I was listening to recently with someone who is sharing that she'd learned that some influencers, are even paid by the meat industry or dairy industry to try to help. So I have no idea about that, but they're certainly the meat and dairy industry are big, and they have a lot of lobbying dollars and money to influence things.
Do you have a way when, once we have nuggets of information related to psychology that comes our way, do you have a way to be critical of them, to filter them in our lives, and to, I guess, make the difference between misinformation and what is accurate? So, for instance, for the meaning part, you brought to my understanding a much more nuanced view on, meaning, the quest for meaning in one's life. Never thought of it this way, but when you came, when you come face to face with that kind of rhetoric, related to psychology, what should be the first instinct?
Are you asking like how to make sense of what might be more accurate or truthful or?
So, for instance, I said I'm not a dietitian, not a nutritionist. So when I come, face to face with facts related to nutrition, I always ask myself, what is the consensus? What is the expert consensus on this aspect of nutrition? And if there isn't any, if it's just one study in the vacuum, then I know, what to make of it. So is there a version of that for psychology?
Yeah, I would say for a lot of things there are, and I think, probably with the nutrition piece, you've probably found some trusted resources that do their own research and vetting. For example, for me, I find that the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine and or Dr. Greger, they're both, nutritionfacts.org. Those are, and then I can do my own research too to some degree and look at things. So yeah, I would say in psychology it could be similar in that a lot of topics there are articles and research that look at different things. It's not as easy to pinpoint sometimes because psychological concepts can be a little bit harder sometimes to grasp. But maybe just what you said a little bit ago is it nuanced? Most things in psychology are not always cut and dried, and there most often is nuance, and so it's the whatever it is being shared in a way that allows for nuance, that allows for difference, that allows to make sense of something, not in a black and white, cut and dried way, but in a way that actually fits the kind of messiness of our humanity and the diversity of our humanity. So, and there certainly is research out there, and I suppose, for example, the American Psychological Association might be a resource for some research, articles and things like that. And but yeah, just I think the nuance piece could be a big part of it. And someone not just being driven by their own ego to have to prove a point, but actually wanting to know what is the deeper truth here.
We have you as a voice to remind us that being vegan is not about removing things from your life. It's also about gaining things and gaining new perspectives, new friends, new meaning, and new forms of joy. It's often people, I think, deep down can feel threatened when we tell them, become vegan. And they think of it as, well, you're trying to take away my way of life, you're trying to take away my habits, my this and that. And actually, it's not the case. I'm trying to give you something, which is a much healthier perspective, I think, for activists to have, and also for vegans who.
Yeah, I'm with you. And I was just thinking, even though, for example, vegans know that veganism is not about food per se, food can be the biggest obstacle for people because we have to eat, And so, and like you say, it can be tied to our culture, it can be tied to our upbringing and our memories. We have emotional attachments to certain foods. And so, discovering that veganism is abundant in multiple ways, starting with the food, that many of us discover that actually our food choices expand, really. I mean, I eat so much more diversely and interestingly than I did before I was vegan, where I just ate the same things over and over again. And just now I try all different kinds of spices and foods, and I like to cook now. I didn't before. So it did open up my food world and expanded it in ways that are wonderful, but then it also expanded me beyond that too, in many other ways, psychologically, emotionally, spiritually, socially.
Do you find that vegans become more resilient to the trials that life throws at us, for having done that transformation, for having grown our heart and all of that?
Yeah, I would definitely like to think so. I don't know that there would be any hard studies that would know for sure about that, but just the very foundation of looking at our values, seeing that a choice that we're making every day is not aligning, going against what is the quote unquote societal norm to eat and live in a way that is aligned. And then being able to navigate the tough emotions. Claire Mann calls it the burden of knowing, this burden of being aware of suffering in a way that other people are still kind of walled off from seeing or feeling. Learning to navigate all of that, I would think, gives a certain amount of resilience, and it certainly can. And so that's where I think for those vegans that might be struggling emotionally, that finding ways to care for yourself, whether it be the meditation that your last guest was teaching about, and certainly including that. And then my book is filled with a lot of different exercises that are kind of self-care exercises. Each chapter has things that involve, there's some guided meditations, there's other exercises, just having ways to care for yourself through this, because the better place that you're in, and it's okay that you have tough emotions, that's understandable, but also having a way to get through those emotions so that you don't feel stuck in them. That's, I think, so important for us on this vegan journey. And some people might not struggle with the tough emotions as much, and others might. And so just wherever you're at, having resources and support.
Wonderful. Angela, this has been such an amazing conversation. I feel like we went everywhere. Which
you ask some good questions. You really do.
Thank you. Well, I need to keep the conversation interesting and also not, you know, take away from the book. You know, I don't want people to feel like, you know, reading the book is just, you know, a repeat of the podcast they heard. So yes, it's a exercise in communication, and yes, please get the book. The book again is called The Vegan Transformation. Such a you need to nourish your and you know, inspire yourself with new perspectives on what it means to be an activist for veganism, and live your veganism in a healthy manner. And this book, again, supported with studies and nuanced takes, get you there. I really appreciate your time, Angela. Did you want to add something before we end the conversation?
No, I mean, nothing that I can think of other than just it was really a pleasure to be here. And you asked really deep questions that require, you know, a lot of thought, you know, that don't have easy answers, but yet are really important to reflect on and for us to think about in a deeper way. And so I really appreciated the conversation and just sending, you know, best wishes to all listening. And, you know, certainly I can be, you know, you'll probably share my contact information in the notes about the episode, but at angelacrawfordphd.com if there's questions or somebody wants to reach out.
Yes, as I told people in the introduction, please visit the episode notes for a link to the book. And yes, contact Angela. She's available and she's amazing. So thank you again, Angela. Thank you, everyone, for listening. I kindly invite you to share this podcast with the vegans you know. Let's encourage more people to take action. Again, thank you so much for caring, and I will see you next Tuesday for a new episode.